All right, let's go ahead and get started. How's it going? Good. You didn't look like it was going so well a few minutes ago. Any complaints, issues? Yes.
What do we need feedback on, like, everything?
Okay, you must be one of the mechanical engineering teams. Yeah, Dr. Cohen's a little bit behind on his grading. I talked to him this morning, and he's hoping to get return homework assignments 1 and 2 today, and he should get caught up by next week. He's had some serious things going on this semester, so the rest of the teams have already received feedback. So sorry about that, but these things happen. What else? No other issues? No. Everything's fantastic. What? Nothing. Okay. So what should we talk about today? Yes. Yes.
Are we supposed to go based off what we learned in Tech Write?
Well, you're learning similar things, but the actual template for the document is what's on the website here. And from time to time we revision it. But I think we're on version 4. This version 4, that's what we're using this semester. The content in technical communications is evolving a little bit, so that's why there's a little bit of disparity between the two documents. Okay, other, yes, your problems, good.
Same sort of question. It says, like, for this week was design constraints narrative, but it's not labeled that in the design document.
So right. In the design document, the first section is problem statement. The second section is the design constraints, right?
Yeah, design requirements.
And that has two.
Yeah, functional and non-functional.
Well, it has two main components to it. One is the tables themselves that contain the actual constraints, and one is the, and then there's the narrative that describes the constraints.
So the narrative is what's considered design requirements.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about when we went over the design document that the narrative is you describe why these design constraints were set to the values that they were and that kind of thing. So if you want a good example, if you're still struggling with that a little bit, let me show you an example that actually I just read this morning. This happens to be a team I'm advising, so they get extra scrutiny. And they actually did a pretty good job of revising their design constraints. So if you read this section, I know it's an electrical engineering project, but you can get the concept that there's a lot of really good explanation of where their numeric constraints came from. And I gave it a very high score because I think it was really well written. This is a second semester team. Now the one thing they got nailed on, which surprised me, and all my senior design 2 teams got nailed on this, no references. And we were talking about this in our coordinating meeting today. Anytime in any document or presentation you make a statement of fact, like, four-wheel cars are very popular, you need a reference for that. That's not your original thought. You're stating a fact that has come more than likely from some definitive scientific source that's actually measured this. So in this section, the one thing they got nailed on was they make a lot of nice statements about things, but those aren't their original thoughts, and they should have been referenced. And that's something we constantly struggle with in your writing, but that's something you've got to learn, because when you get out of here and you do this, you're going to get caught with either plagiarism, or you're going to have a very irate person on your doorstep claiming you stole their work. And if you don't think that happens in industry, if you don't think that happens within your own work group, you've got a lot to learn. You're going to have the worst kind of sniping in your own work group. If you get a chance to work in a group of, let's say, a dozen engineers, and you go give a presentation and you start talking about stuff that was discussed with other people in the group, they're going to get really upset if you don't credit them with some of that information. I've seen that happen quite a lot over the years. Okay, does that help? And you know, again, one of the nice things about having all these websites out there, whenever you have a question about what's expected, go find a few projects that are very close to what you're trying to do, and look at the documents they've turned in to get a specific idea of how other students have dealt with some of these constraints. And if you're unsure about whether that's a good team or not, just send me an email and say, hey, you know, we're looking at this team. You know, was this a good project? What do you think overall of this project? And I'll tell you what, you know, roughly, if they're a good group to model or not.
I just have a question about the presentations. It's on the next week or the following week.
Right.
In March. How is that going to work? Like, is it scheduled time slots or?
They pay you for this, don't they? That's a great lead-in for today's lecture. That's what I want to talk about today. So, any other questions before presentations? We'll spend today on this whole PDR, as we call it.
Yeah, going back to last week's homework rubric, it says covers all four sections adequately for the problem statement.
Right.
And in the template, it doesn't really clearly define what those four sections are.
Well, we talked about those in class. I believe it does define those in the template. Right here. Roughly, you'll spend about half a page on each of these to get your two-page total, though the 2 pages is, again, just a minimum. A number of the problem statements came up short in terms of length. That's not uncommon at this point in the semester, but you know, that's a sign you don't quite understand enough about your project yet, because there's no problem writing 2 pages on any of the projects that have been selected this semester. Just you need to learn a little bit more about what's required. And typically, background information is where a lot of the teams are lacking. Okay, any other questions? Like other than technical presentation, which we'll spend time on today. Okay, so what's going to happen on March 1st? Okay, and what's a preliminary design review going to be like? And that's a trick question, so be careful. Preliminary design reviews will be largely like the final design reviews. Who does not understand what the final design reviews are like? And nobody better raise their hand. Why? Because you've presumably attended final design reviews. Because we've canceled classes, so you could attend them. So every semester we do two of these presentations, the preliminary design review and the final design review. You've hopefully by now seen what a final design review is like. And again, all the slides for all these presentations are available on all the team's websites. So you can go look at what people are actually presenting. We'll actually do a little bit of that today. The preliminary design review is coming up on March 1st. This semester, this will be held in the Student Activity Center. We have reserved a bunch of rooms. We have three rooms, actually. And these are going to be held from approximately 11 in the morning to about 5 in the afternoon. Now, we have a little bit of a scheduling kind of logistics because we have three rooms. That's all we could get. So we're going to schedule all the projects into those three rooms. And what I'll do very soon is post a schedule, and you'll have to pick a time in that schedule. I'm actually going to suggest some times based on projects and stuff and advisor commitments and things. And then you have to go negotiate with your advisor and make sure that they can attend at that time. Your advisor must be present at these preliminary design reviews. And it's your responsibility. Listen to this carefully, because this is a problem we've had in the past. It's your responsibility to make sure your advisor shows up. Now, that's been a problem in the past, and I've dinged teams when their advisors don't show up. And a lot of times the advisors will come to me and say, this is the first I'm hearing that I was supposed to be at a design presentation. So what I expect you to do as team members, it would not be a bad idea to go visit your advisor's office about 15 minutes before the presentation starts and drag them over to the SAC. Because if you leave it up to them, they may forget about it or they may miss it. So once you settle on a time with your advisor, it's your job to make sure that your advisor shows up for that meeting, for that presentation. Like the final design reviews, we do these on a really tight schedule. You're going to have 15 minutes to do your presentation, 5 minutes question and answer. We run roughly 3 of these per hour. And you'll do them from PowerPoint presentations. You will do them live from your website. This is another little thing, one of my crazy little things, but there's a reason for this. I need to make sure that what you're actually showing me at that presentation is available on your website. This is going to be a constant theme throughout this course, because in early days when I started teaching senior design, students would be forever editing their presentations right up to the last minute. They'd walk in with their laptop or memory stick, give that presentation, and that version of the presentation would never make it to the website. And I know you're all saying that's impossible. Of course we're going to do that. Well, believe me, about half the presentations never made it to the website. So you will do the presentation live from the website. That's the only place you'll be allowed to do the presentation from. So don't bring me a memory stick and say, here's our most recent version. Get it uploaded to the website. The presentation itself will be, you as students will attend as many of these presentations as possible. We have to still work out the logistics for that, because I know you have other classes. And in some cases, you may have to miss a class to give your presentation. We'll work with your other class instructors to arrange that, because it's just a big logistics nightmare to try to find times when everybody's available. The final presentations, what we call the DRs, or the design reviews, those will be held in engineering architecture this year, this semester. But the preliminary will be over at the SAC. Okay, so that's, and they're on the 15th of February, they're on March 1st. And I would encourage you to make sure that you show your advisor that presentation before you present it. So this has been another problem. Advisors will get to these presentations and they'll say, well, that's the first time I'm seeing this information. And advisors get really particular about this because they think it reflects on them. So when I sit there and tear their team apart, they're taking it personally. So they'll come to me afterwards and say, I didn't approve any of that stuff. Well, that's even worse, because now not only did you get torn apart, but your advisor's telling me that he or she didn't really like your presentation either. So get on the same page with your advisor on these presentations. So how do you do that? Well, all of you are meeting with your advisors weekly, and you should reserve the week prior to the first, which is, roughly September 23rd or 24th or something like that. At that weekly meeting with your advisor, you should go through the presentation with your advisor. If you leave it to the last minute, it just doesn't work. There's just not enough time to get all the problems resolved in your presentation. So I expect you to meet with your advisor, go through the presentation with your advisor. Since it's, for many of you, it will be the first time that you're doing a 15-minute presentation, I also encourage you to practice it at least once so that you get the timing right. But do not practice it 10 times. That's overkill. You probably should only practice it once or twice so that when you give the presentation, you're fairly fresh and interested in it. We have facilities at which you can practice these things. You can use the tech center. You can use some of the rooms in this building. But I would, when you practice it, I would encourage you to actually do it as a kind of formal presentation to your team rather than just all kind of sitting around the table. Yeah?
Are we supposed to bring like a small index card so you can view them for the presentation?
If you want to have index cards, that's fine. I mean, I generally encourage people not to use those, but if you want to, it's okay. I mean, I'm pretty easygoing about how you actually give the presentation. The only thing I don't want you to do is to read from a script. It should be somewhat of a spontaneous presentation. Ground rules. If you haven't heard about this, only the speaker is allowed to answer questions. I have been known in these meetings to tell advisors to please keep quiet. Because sometimes if a student's struggling, the advisor wants to answer the question, and I'll usually give them a look and say, sit down. Your team members cannot rescue you either. There's no lifelines or any of that kind of stuff. It's you and only you. Why? This is your chance to show me that you understand all of the project, including the pieces you haven't worked on. Now you're thinking, oh, that's terribly unfair. I have to talk about something I didn't work on. Well, someday soon you're all going to be managers and you're going to have to do that on a regular basis. You'll always be in engineering, you're always going to be talking about things you know nothing about. That's just part of life. So you have to learn how to do this. You have to learn how to assimilate knowledge and be convincing when you present it. It's also a good way to kind of get some cross-training going on within the group. So any questions about sort of the ground rules or the structure or the logistics? Well, what I'll spend the rest of the day on, of course, is what we actually want you to present.
Yep. Is the time requirement strictly?
Yes.
Before 15, like, does it go over 15?
You will be stopped. 15. Yeah. Okay. This is another funny aspect of it, but it's the way it is in the real world when you do these kinds of things. So I will stop you. I'll have a timer, and I will stop you at 15 minutes. I usually give you a sign that you have 1 or 2 minutes left.
So if we're under like a minute or something, that's not a problem.
Being under is not too bad. I've been very impressed over the years that students usually, the teams that do a decent job of preparing are usually within 30 seconds. I mean, they're really tight. I've always been impressed by that. If you're under 12 minutes, I might make a note that you're a little bit short. But generally, if it's, 13, 14, 15 minutes and it's a good presentation, you'll be okay. The first one's a little hard because you feel like you don't have enough to talk about. But by the next three, it'll be more a question of too much to talk about. We do give you a little bit of your grade will be devoted to how the person actually presents, but if you're not a good public speaker, don't stress out about that. You'll be okay. It's not about it's not about the cosmetics of the presentation. It's more about the content. So a lot of students feel, oh, I'm not, you know, I'm going to fumble, I'm going to not speak well. That's okay. That kind of stuff we tend to overlook. But what's important is to convey the technical information. So one of the ways you do that, index cards, if you're a weak public speaker, index cards is a good way, because often you'll freeze and you'll forget about things. That keeps you on track. Another thing I often do is put notes in the note sections on the PowerPoint slide, so you remember what you're supposed to talk about. Though you won't see those, you can actually use those as a guide. Now, what I want to do today is about half about sort of logistics of a 15-minute presentation and half about the content. So if you've got a 15-minute presentation, how many slides are we talking about? I'm a big template writer person, if you haven't figured out that. Whenever anybody asks me to write something, my first question is, how long does it have to be? Because I have to always kind of know my structure. Because I feel in today's world, a lot of things you write or develop are based on these kinds of constraints. So you've got 15 minutes. How many content slides are you going to have? What? I'm sorry? Over 15? Like 30? And the more content slides you have, the better, right? How many? What do our intro to engineering students think?
Probably
20 content slides or 20 total slides?
A slide a minute
is a very good guideline. In fact, I've been in environments where your upper management has told you how many slides you can have, and we've used for some very I've been in presentations where they forced us to do one slide every 3 minutes. That was probably the most extreme, but that was a very that was a big presentation with a lot at stake, and you were really explaining slides well. For these kinds of presentations, one slide a minute is a good gauge. Now, I will tell you that many of you, when you get up to present, are going to either forget what you want to talk about, or you're going to have this tendency to put up the slide and do one of two things. You're going to say something like, these are my design constraints, and then you're going to click past that slide. Or you're going to say, start actually reading the slide verbatim. And so if you're the type of person who gets nervous when you talk, you really need to practice to a point where you kind of know what you want to talk about on each slide, because in the adrenaline rush of the actual presentation, you're going to get nervous and you're going to forget about things. If, on the other hand, you start reading the slides, staring at the screen, reading the slides, you're also going to lose your audience. So the way to overcome those things is practice. Now, if you're giving a 15-minute presentation, what's a good sign that you're actually ready to give this presentation? I'm going to give you I think it's a good little tip about how to be a successful presenter. How do you know when you're ready to give this presentation? No. Nope. Close. Because? So what, do we have any athletes in the room? Like who play sports involving like hand-eye coordination and all that? Like what?
Hockey.
Hockey? And like? Basketball. Have you ever heard about how really high-performing athletes will tell you they can actually visualize themselves doing things? Right? You hear this a lot, that they can, for example, free throw shooters will tell you, someone's a really, really good free throw shooter, they'll tell you they can just close their eyes and like see the whole process. If you're ready to make your presentation, you should be able to close your eyes and see all of those slides in your head, be able to actually list the first slide is this, the second slide is this, the third slide is this, the fourth slide is this. If you're not at that point, I mean, you may miss one or two, but generally, if you're not at that point, you're not ready to make the presentation. Because when you give the presentation, you don't want to be looking at the screen, you want to be talking to the audience. And that also means you have a pretty good idea of what's on each slide if you can actually remember them in your head. So you have to get to the point where you're that familiar with the slides. Okay, so we have 15 minutes. We have approximately 15 content slides. There's a few additional slides we're going to need, and we'll go through those first, and then we'll focus on the content slides. So what are some of the additional, what I call filler slides, that we're going to need? Hint, hint. We need a cover. We need a title slide. You've got in the template an example for the title slide. You don't have to follow the template exactly. On the other hand, I don't want you to spend a lot of time on the artwork, because that's just not really what the point of the course is. But you'll see, teams usually like to mess around with the graphics on the slides. I mean, that's okay, but your title slide needs to have the official title of your project, which should be the same title that appears on your website, and it should be the same title that we have in our, that I have in my grading spreadsheet for the project. It should be the same title that's on your design document. And again, you're saying, oh, what, you know, that's crazy, but probably right now only about half the projects have agreement between, well, will have agreement between their presentation, their design document, and their website on the title. And that's one of the things we'll check eventually. But title, official title, have some kind of interesting, relevant graphic that tells people a little bit about what your project is doing. So this is a presentation on renewable energy. You got a nice picture of a wind turbine there. It has your team members listed. It's okay to highlight the person who's actually giving the talk. It has your advisors listed, and then your affiliation. Okay, so that's a filler slide. You'll go through this pretty quickly. Simply introducing your talk, but you won't really dwell on that slide. What are some of the other filler slides that we need? The what? Someone's been doing, who said that? You've been doing homework? All right, so there's two other slides, filler slides. One is a summary, and the other is a citation slide. Now, I'll get to that in a second. The summary slide, I want you to summarize what you plan to accomplish in Senior Design 1 and what you plan to accomplish in Senior Design 2. Now, you're looking at this slide. You would not believe the number of teams that actually have this exact text on their slides. About 25% of the teams last semester on their first presentations did that. That's embarrassing. But that's what I face whenever I give guidelines. People tend to copy them verbatim. So, you know, obviously you don't have to have this text, but the top half of the slide should be devoted to what you're going to accomplish in Senior Design 1, the bottom half in what you're going to accomplish in Senior Design 2. So that's, you know, we don't need to dwell too much on the summary slide. Now the next slide, the last slide in your deck, will be a list of your references. If you put this slide up during your presentation and say, these are my references, I will reduce your grade by one grade level. You are not to talk about the slide. We go through this every semester. You are not to talk about this slide. Why is this slide in your presentation? You've been coached by somebody. Did they talk about this in seminar maybe? No? Exactly. When many people are going to find, they're going to be Google searching, I need a senior design project on wind turbines, and your project's going to come up. They're going to see this nice presentation, but they need to see the references, because A lot of what you've done in this presentation is other people's work. So you're acknowledging that. And also, this is a way to learn more about the project, because they can go here and see what you consider to be your most useful and significant references. So this is background material. It's a slide that's important, but not meant to be shown. You do not ever show this slide in the actual presentation. You can stop at the summary slide and ask, are there any questions? Now, I say this every semester, and every semester there's a few teams that do that, so, you know, just don't do it. You may have, as appendices, some additional slides. One of the really powerful things when you're giving a presentation is when somebody asks a question that's not part of your normal presentation, and you say, oh, I have a backup slide on that. So then you go to that backup slide, and voila, you have a backup slide that explains that specific question. That's a really powerful thing when you're speaking, giving a technical talk. It shows you're really prepared, you really understand the material, you understand the way the audience perceives the material. So it's perfectly acceptable to have a bunch of additional backup slides that explain particular points in greater detail, but you won't cover those in the actual presentation. Now, yes. The backup slides can be in a deck, just after the references slide, yeah. So after the title slide, the next filler slide is the abstract. Now, what does it say here? So, why do we have an abstract slide in the presentation? People who look at the presentation online can get a summary of the project. Do not put your abstract slide up and start reading it. Again, even after all of this, about a quarter of the group seem to do that. Or worse, they'll put this up and say, this is my abstract, and then they'll just stare at it like it's a piece of art or something. And then they'll click through it and not even explain it. This is just background material. You won't actually dwell on this slide during the presentation. Okay, so that's a filler slide. And that's why the total number of slides will be on the order of about 20 or, you know, 22, but they'll be primarily 15 content slides. Now, after the abstract slide, after the abstract slide, there's a slide here, there's a slide that is not here. And this is one of the more controversial points about the presentation format that faculty and I argue about. But in many talks you've seen, what would be the next slide after the title and abstract? In fact, some of you who've taken courses here on presentations, the teachers of those courses may actually tell you to do this. Outline your talk. None of you have been in a class where they've told you must present a slide on the outline that goes over the outline of your talk, right? Who's sat in a course where they've told you that? I'm seeing a couple. Only one. Okay. Well, that's actually in many cases correct. Except, why do we not do an outline slide here? This is my little, one of my viewpoints on this. People disagree with this point of view, but it's generally you'll find in these kinds of forums, people don't have outline slides. Why? What happens when you get up and spend 1 or 2 minutes on your outline slide? What does that tell me as the audience? You don't have enough interesting things to talk about because you only have 15 minutes. And if you're spending 1 to 2 minutes on that slide, you've just spent 10% of your talk telling me what you're going to talk about. That's just not a good use of time, in my opinion. Further, if it's a really good, tight 15-minute talk, why do I not need an outline slide?
Because the information's going to be there anyway.
And what about my ability to follow the information?
You should be able to follow
it. I should be able to follow your talk. I should know where you're headed, where you've come from, in a 15-minute talk without having someone tell me these are the things they're going to talk about. Further, with PowerPoint, you can do things like you can have headings and you can kind of present some of that structure in the headings and footers so that you don't need to actually spend time explaining it. You can say like introduction, colon, and have a few slides that are intro slides, approach slides, that kind of thing. So I don't want you to do a outline slide, even though you may hear from other faculty that, you know, they would like to see that. Send them to me. But generally, we don't do outline slides. So the next slide you'll do, and again, I sort of consider this a filler slide, is your team overview slide. Now, very often when students do the team overview slide, they will put up the team pictures, names, and say, "This is my team." Is that what we're looking for here? What are we looking for on a team overview slide? And this is also true of the team link on your websites. I'd like to see the same information put on your websites once you have it. What is the point of the team overview slide?
To see what each person's part is and what they specialize
in. I want to see specific roles for each person on the team. So what I think a good way to do this is to actually do a matrix of major tasks or responsibilities and people and show which of those various people are responsible for. You can also just list their responsibilities. But in general, I want to see what role each person has on the team. Now, if there's certain duties, if somebody's assigned certain duties, that's almost a dead giveaway that they're either a non-critical or a non-performing member of the team. And I mention this because I want you to think about this. When you go to get your permanent job and you're on a team, you want to make sure that the responsibilities you have are considered essential or core responsibilities for the team. So what's the death sign? If I see a person associated with a particular set of duties, that's really a bad sign. What are some of those duties? And we see this every time, at least on one team.
If it's something like a web designer or like a documenter.
If I see under your name, the only things under your name are web designer and documentation, that's going to get you a hit, because that's a sign that person isn't really doing anything significant technically on the project. The other thing that I look for is, very often you'll look at the assignments and you'll say, well, everybody seems to be doing everything. That's not good either. So this is a slide where you're going to show us a little bit about what are the various expertise that each of the members have and how they fit into the project. One person may be software, one person may be hardware, one person may be specialist on a particular type of technology. We want to see that kind of detail. You don't have to go into specifics of your project, but we generally want to see what role each person on the team is performing or what set of roles. And that, of course, is going to roll back to your Microsoft project documents, where you've presumably worked this out anyway. So that should come directly off your Microsoft project document. I know that, some teams will use pictures. Make sure the pictures are relevant. I give you a little bit of leeway on that, but, when I see high school prom pictures, maybe that's not the best picture. And I have seen high school prom pictures on this page, because for some people, that's the nicest picture they've ever had taken. I understand that, but, High school prom pictures, maybe not. But if you want to get a little bit creative and, you know, put some attitude in the picture, I'm okay with that. They don't have to be 100% professional, but, you know, just make it tell a story. Make it interesting. And, but also, you know, good taste and nothing objectionable and all that. So don't put a can, don't put a picture up of you drinking out of a beer can or something. Unless you're sponsored by a beer company, then maybe that's okay. Now, the next slide. This is one students really struggle with. When you're sitting through a senior design talk, what is one of the first things you're thinking as an audience member? If it's going to be a really interesting talk, a talk that you remember for ages, what's it going to take? Really good technical content? Lots of equations and deep theory? No. Why they chose that project. Now, what's the worst thing you can say you can do when you introduce your project? You'll be amazed at how many students do not even try to tell me why they chose the project during this talk, particularly the first talk where this is the first public viewing of your project. Some students will say things like, well, you know, my advisor gave us this project. Well, if you're a manager assessing the people in your group and someone comes up and says, well, I'm doing this project because I was told to do this project, what are you going to think of that person? They either may not want to do it or they don't seem to show initiative. So, you know, what I want to hear on this slide is some interesting story about how you found this senior design project. I want heartbreaking. You know, you were in third grade and, you know, you watched something happen and you realized that's what I want to do with my life. Now, if you don't have such a story, make one up. This is, you know, this is the marketing part of engineering. You're in a competitive marketplace. You know, you don't just want to get up there and be dull. So one of the things you have to do is talk about how this project addresses a contemporary societal issue. And I sent you these lists, and you have to identify one or two of these areas and show me how your project, and talk about how your project addresses that. That's an important requirement for the motivation of your project. But also, in this slide, it'd be nice to hear a little bit about how you found this project and to bring some personal interest into that. That's what it'll take to make the talk memorable to people. Next, what you need to do is sort of boil the project down to challenges, essential, sort of the basic challenges, technical challenges of the project. So you can talk a little bit about why you selected the project, why it's important, but also talk a little bit more specifically about what's involved in the project. So in this project on renewable energy, for example, if your goal was to build a wind turbine, you know, obviously designing of the wind turbine is going to be important, fabrication of the wind turbine is going to be important, and testing and validation of the design is going to be important. And then your third motivation slide, you can talk a little bit more about the second page of your problem statement, where you now start to get into the specific technical goals. And at the very end of this, and this is, I think, where students have a lot of trouble, at the very end of this, You need to be able to boil your project down to one or two core technical issues. You know, to make this next generation solar cell, we're going to need to invent a solar cell that is 87% efficient, which has never been done before. So that tells me clearly you know what your major technical hurdle is, what the essence of your project is. It may be cost. You know, nobody's ever built a device like this for particular costs. Nobody's achieved a particular level of functionality. What are the make or break criteria for your project? By the end of this motivation section, that's what I need to know, is what are the real serious technical challenges on this project? The next thing that you'll do is you'll give me a project overview. This is where you'll use your block diagram. So we're going to force you to make up the block diagram at this point in the course. And that's going to show me how you're decomposing this problem into smaller pieces that are going to be worked in, you know, independently. The next couple slides are going to be your technical and non-technical design constraints. Now this slide, this is a good example of the difference between presenting and simply reading slides. Many, many teams will literally put up their table of design constraints and read through them one by one. That's wasted time. Focus on, it's okay to put them up and let the audience read them while you're talking, but focus on one or two or three of the really critical ones and talk about those in a little more detail. So, for example, we have the guitar tuner project, and you know, the overall goal is to build this automated tuner of a guitar. Well, there's a lot of different aspects to that, but what would you say is your key technical challenge? What? The torque. Turning the pegs with this thing. And that's really what I want to see, is I want to know, you know, what are the one or two design constraints that you're really worried about meeting because they're really essential to the project. That tells me you understand quite a bit about what your challenges are. Do the same thing with the non-technical design constraints. These are going to be things like sustainability, power, size, you know, these real world kinds of constraints. Now, this is the part that you're going to get a little bit uncomfortable with. The next seven slides or so deal with your approach. By the time you give this presentation, I want to have a pretty good idea of how you're going to approach solving your problem. This is where you get to go into good technical information. What are some of the things I should see in these approach slides? How are you going to communicate your approach to your design project to me? What are some of the ways that engineers communicate these kinds of concepts? I know, 5-7 pages of 12 text bullets per page. Right? Yeah. I want to see pictures. Like if you're designing, we talked early on about designing a golf club. Show me a picture of a golf club. To the side of that picture, put a couple of the key equations that govern the behavior of that golf club. And talk about that. Talk about, you know, your approach is going to be to use graphite shaft because its modulus of elasticity, you know, fits in this equation and gives you some great performance. You don't have to actually be 100% correct at this point, but at least tell us right now what you're thinking in terms of the detailed design. I want to see tables showing me performance trade-offs of different parameter settings. I want to see graphs showing me kind of how you expect this device to behave. Now these get very specific to your projects, but you can look at And in a moment, we'll look at a couple presentations that are really did a really nice job of this. But you've got all these presentations online where people have done this. There's already quite an inventory out there. So you can learn from what other people have done, how to present the information. And we'll look at a couple in a second. Now, no real-world engineering project presentation is adequate without discussion of cost and schedule. So I want an estimate on the cost slide. I want an estimate of what you think this device, when you build it, is going to cost. Now, at this stage in the course, this is going to be a little bit rough. But from your problem statement, you have some idea of what the market will bear, as we like to say. And now, by now, you should have some idea of how you're going to build this thing. So you can give me some estimate of what you think the cost goal is going to be and what are the critical elements in meeting that cost goal. And we'll talk in another lecture, I think it's in a couple of weeks, we'll talk about more specifically about cost. And then I also want to see schedule. You can generate this from your Microsoft project documents. You can actually just put up the Gantt chart here. But reduce it to a version that I can read easily. So only hit the major points, like the first level or second level points. And then show us where you sit on that schedule. The last slide, major technical risks and challenges. One of the concepts you're going to hear a lot about when you graduate is what's called risk minimization. Whenever you're executing a project, you always have to have backup plans. You have to understand what your risks are. What I want to see on this slide are what are the major challenges you must overcome. You know, you have to invent some new material that's never been created before. And what are the risks? And what is your risk mitigation plan? I'll give you a very specific example of this that just happened 1 hour ago. I had students in my office telling me they need to buy a new cement mixer because the cement mixer down in the civil engineering lab is a mess. What's wrong with that? I have no problem buying the cement mixer, but I have two big problems with them sitting in my office today telling me if I don't buy that cement mixer today, they're going to miss their deliverables this semester. What's wrong with that? And if you do this in industry, your boss is going to be even worse about this. I went back to their slide, last semester's presentation. Do you think it said on here we needed to buy a new cement mixer? No. Do you know why it didn't say that? Because they had not even gone into the lab and looked at that cement mixer. So that tells me they did inadequate research. They needed a piece of equipment that I don't have right now. And it may take me, let's say it takes a month to get that cement mixer here, which it won't, but that's a big issue. I had a group last semester come to me and say, second semester, this is actually a group at the end of first semester, and they said, we need an oscilloscope that measures up to 10 gigahertz to do our project. A scope like that costs about $100,000. And that's not something I can produce in a short amount of time. So this is where you have to list, you know, what are the critical resources? We had a second semester team last semester that almost flunked the course because their whole project was conditioned on about $8,000 worth of equipment that never arrived. We had a group this semester, we just got an ANSYS Fluent license issue resolved that held them up for a while. They could have dealt with that over the Christmas break, but they chose not to. And now they've lost about 4 weeks this semester because of that licensing issue. So this is where you enumerate the really critical things that you need if you don't have them. You know, I want to know what equipment, what technical issues are critical to the success of your project. This is a really important slide, but it's one that students do a really bad job of this in the first semester. And then summary and references. So any questions about the structure? And then I just want to, for a couple minutes, show you a couple really good presentations, examples. Any questions on that? Any? Okay, so let's look at a team. This was a project that dealt with the design of some wind turbines that are actually going up on the new McGonigal Pearson Hall building on Broad Street. There's going to be 5 wind turbines deployed. And and this team did a really nice job on their slides. They had some people who really understood how to make good presentations. And I'll just kind of slowly go through these. This was their block diagram. But they did a lot of good slides where they mixed graphics and text or graphics and data. These are really good approach slides because they're telling me a lot about the project. And you cover a lot of territory. You show me actual real physical implementations. You show me how the data, you expect the data to play out. And you show me a little bit about the underlying theory. Later, as you get further in the course, showing me pictures of actually constructing the project and such will be important. Those can be very effective. And then eventually you'll get into data and such. This was actually their second semester presentation. But when you go through your approach slides, don't just make them all text. Try to use graphs, tables, figures to tell me about your project and about how you designed it and how you expect it to behave. So you can look at, you know, any of these presentations. They're all out there. And we've got a lot of good examples to work from. So, March 1st, it'll come up fast, your first presentation. Next week, we're actually going through the first hardware deliverables for Senior Design 2. So, if you know people in Senior Design 2, ask them to show you the hardware that they're building. Next week, they're going to show us the first versions of their hardware, first of 3 attempts at that. So, it'll be a pretty interesting week next week. There's also the career fair on Thursday, the university career fair. I hope everybody will be going to at least a part of that. If you're planning on having a job a year from now, you need to be looking now. So go to the career fair, walk around, see how things work, get some sense of what it's all about. Okay? All right, so I'll talk to the intro students after class. The rest of you can be done. Thanks.